All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, June 13th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here at UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a balmy 76 degrees, extremely overcast, hot and humid here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Science Fiction is Our New 21st Century Reality, and it is only the beginning. We've mentioned that quite a number of times. We have talked about all kinds of disruptive technologies that are rolling out into the mainstream. Whether we have a physical disruptive technology such as our devices and artificial intelligence and this whole new big pulsating brain in the cloud that's going to be running everything, or if it's on a microbial level, we have looked a lot at microbes, bacteria, viruses, and different ways that they can infect organisms, and then took a look at maybe some of the ways that those organisms can specifically influence us. We've looked a lot at gut bacteria and the microbiome, taking a look at some of these living therapeutics that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has their sticky little fingers in, as well as Georgie Porgy Church through his CRISPR technology. And starting to be a pretty scary place out there. A lot of this stuff is just rolling along, and they are selling it to us as a dangling carrot to make your life easier or better or healthier. It's all in the name of convenience. So we are falling for the trick, people. This is a full spectrum takeover of all of life, of this natural organism, this ecosystem that we call N, capital N, with nature. I mentioned that yesterday. I remember that. But that's the point. They are rich, powerful. The science community knows all. And by being able to break all of the chinks in the living armor and discover all of its mysteries, they can also find ways to manipulate it. I was going to continue down the AI path, but I kind of got off topic yesterday. Started getting into all kinds of different technologies, all which are connected. They don't seem so on the surface, but they absolutely are when you back up the truck and look at the grand plan from up above. And in some of my digging over the last 24 hours or so, I came upon a few things that I think I need to share with you. So we're going to have to make a detour from AI, and we will get back to that maybe tomorrow, if I can get through some of the stuff I dug up for you today. There have been reports now, I don't know if you've seen, but at least on the East Coast, we've had reports about this tick-borne virus. It is very dangerous. Powassan, I believe it's called. No cure for it. Causes permanent neurological disorders in a large number of the people who get infected. There is no cure. Your doctor can only make you comfortable and hope that you make it. I was like, what? And of course, they announced that because our winter was not as brutal as ones in the past up here in the Northeast, the tick problem is going to be overwhelming. Now, we looked at ticks way back when. We also looked at the connection to some of these mysterious, you know, never before seen diseases that appear in the wilds that they try to blame on quote unquote climate change. But we've taken a look a few different times at our history with our entomological warfare program and how some of the research that was going on in the Fort Detrick, Maryland, as well as Plum Islands, never potentially ended. We found that New York Times story that had talked back in 1982. They had interviewed the colonel or the general that was in charge there, and it had been way scaled back at Fort Detrick for their quote-unquote biological warfare. But it was being still continued in the name of a defensive posture to defend the homelands in the case of some sort of accidental or on purpose biological quote-unquote pandemic. Now, over the last few years, we've had a few practice runs. We've had Ebola, and we've had Zika. We had bird flu, and the pig swine, chicken flu, I don't know. There was that one that was like, and the dog flu, there was, and dog flu is rearing its ugly head again. But remember, when each of these little quote-unquote outbreaks come out, they get to throw all kinds of taxpayer-funded dollars at a problem to the solution. And I believe that Zika, as a matter of fact, at kind of the end of the ramp-up to the beginnings of Zika, to put it in everyone's brain, Zika, 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 be afraid of Zika. And oh, by the way, Zika isn't just transmitted, we found, by mosquitoes, those mosquitoes that are encroaching on the southern portions of the United States, as well as other areas of the globe. No, you can't just get Zika. And in Brazil, you can't just get Zika from mosquitoes. They found that it also potentially could be sexually transmitted and maybe even casually transmitted. Now, what's interesting about that, there was a case in Texas, and I don't have it up in front of me, but I'm just remembering. There was a case in Texas where there was a caretaker, a woman, who was taking care of an elderly gentleman, I believe. And he, I don't know if he had been out of the country or he had done something, but she caught it from him. And she did not have any type of other contact with him except for taking care of him. Now, whether or not she was wiping his butt, you know, coming into contact with other bodily fluids potentially, I don't know that. But at the time, scientists were quite befuddled as to how potentially the virus could have been transmitted. Now, we've looked at a lot of different things in regards to gut bacteria and mutations that they have done in the lab with different pathogens. And we've discovered that they can splice and dice in just about any way, shape, or form. And remember, there also was a paper just recently over the last week or two, and I have to laugh because it was about the off-target mutations that they now are potentially finding with CRISPR. There were up to 1,500 off-target mutations in just one treatment that they had been tinkering with to cure a genetic blindness. It's got to make you wonder. There's been a lot of splicing and dicing going on in the labs. Labs that don't necessarily have tons of oversight. Labs that have been financed by a military-industrial complex. All in the name of keeping you safe, of course. Always with a double-edged sword. It's got to give you at least a moment of pause and concern of what potentially could be released into the wild, again, accidentally or on purpose. Well, listen to this. Listen, I ran down this path looking at mosquitoes because we ran across that story yesterday about the CDC and their behavioral monitoring program, which really kind of caught me off guard. But they were going to be coordinating with a whole bunch of countries around the globe, including Brazil, China, Jordan, countries in the Caribbean, Italy, Vietnam, and Korea to help maintain and standardize and validate community-level surveillance systems for not only diseases, but for mental health as well. That's what struck me as interesting. Like, why would we be working with Brazil, China? I mean, countries that I know for a fact have genetically modified mosquito factories and experiments going on. It just struck me as odd. Well, whoops, I think I found the connection. But in my research this morning, I came across a story out of the New York Times, January 21st, 2015. Scientists work to contain modified organisms to labs. Well, whew, good thing. I'm glad they are working to contain modified organisms to the lab. Could genetically modified bacteria escape from a laboratory or fermentation tank and cause disease or ecological destruction? Well, let's hope not, but this is not yet known to have occurred, the story says. But two groups of scientists reported back on Wednesday in January of 2015 that they had developed a complex technique to prevent it from happening. Scientists have given a common type of bacterium a unique genetic code that makes it dependent for survival on unnatural amino acids that must be fed to it. If such organisms escaped into the wild, where those amino acids are not available, they would die. This really addresses a long-standing problem in biotechnology, says Farron Isaacs, an assistant professor of molecular, cell, and developmental biology at Yale University, who led one of the research groups. He called it a really compelling solution to engineering biocontainment. We've talked a lot about what real biocontainment is going on in these labs and what type of protective gear these scientists must be wearing or not, and if there is even a requirement when they are working on genetically modifying a plant, let's say, and they don't think that maybe a bacteria could jump from species to species, and whether or not they're wearing little shuffly things on their shoes or in a level 4 biofacility. Remember, there are many, many, many laboratories and garages and back bedrooms where people are utilizing DIY CRISPR kits to tinker with life in mommy's back bedroom. I mean, it's frightening. To me, this is one of my worst nightmares, guys. And I was mentioning Fringe and Doctor Who and the X-Files and things yesterday, and I know it makes you sound tinfoil hatty when you do things like that, but guys, if anyone's listening to the show for any length of time, you would already know that, I mean, I have kind of an engineering hat that I wear, and I tend to look at things from a scientific perspective. I try not to get on the tinfoil hat wearing bandwagon. Sometimes it's a little fancy, but, you know, I enjoy it. I used to enjoy it. It used to be fun to think of these dystopian scenarios, but it's not anymore because science has caught up to science fiction. And they are playing out scenarios now in some of these science fiction shows that are more based in reality than most people even realize. And when you see these things, your worst nightmare is actually played out in full Technicolor HD. It's not a joke anymore. It's not funny anymore. And it never really was funny, but it was still kind of a fantasy. But it's not, guys. It's not. Okay, people like George Church and Bill Gates are right in the middle of all of this. And if nothing else, that should frighten you all by itself. In a paper by his team, and that would be Farron Isaacs out of Yale, and another paper from a group led by who? Oh, Georgie Porgy Church at Harvard Medical School, were published online by the Journal of Nature. This work was done utilizing E. coli. Ding, we read all about Georgie Porgy Church rewriting the genome of E. coli. So he's quite an expert determining what genes could be removed and what genes were necessary for survival. And then all the other ones could be repurposed for something else. The work was done using E. coli, which is a species of bacteria used in the production of pharmaceuticals and different chemicals. The researchers said it would be more difficult to apply the technique to genetically modified crops. Well, since 2015, don't worry about it because they already found a way. Guess what? They started using a bacteriophage genetically modified bacteriophage, which is a virus that infects insects. So again, entomological type warfare-esque science. To then, once they infect that insect with some sort of virus or bacteria payload, they then set those insects after a crop. And when those insects start eating the crop, their infected spittle, just like infected spittle in a mosquito that bites you, like old school mosquitoes. You know, there were diseases carried by mosquitoes here in upstate New York. We had to deal with West Nile virus for quite a number of years now. I remember back when I was in college, they had a phone number to call for the Department of Health or maybe the EPA that they publicized. So if you ever saw dead crows or dead birds laying along the side of the road or in the lawn, you were to call because they were going to collect them and do some testing to see whether or not they had a West Nile virus infection. But since then, in New York, they have made the new meningitis vaccine mandatory for children in 7th and 12th grade here in New York. And that was just this past summer, last year. There's a lot of background to that. I've actually collected links on that with the administrator, the, I don't know if he was a senator, whatever he was. He was on the board of the state where they voted this in and made it mandatory. But one of the guys that was spearheading this whole initiative had some interesting ties back to pharmaceutical companies. Surprise! And it didn't get a lot of press, which didn't surprise me either. There were some local publications in Albany that had publicized some of that, but it never actually made it to the mainstream news, to the larger publications. But kudos to those few reporters who actually looked into some of the background to how all of a sudden, out of the blue, New York State became a hotbed for mosquito diseases. Oh, climate change. Though I have to say, 96.1 degrees the other day was quite surprising. It does not happen here often. Even in late July or August, that doesn't happen that often. But anyway, back to this. The researchers said that it would be more difficult to apply the technique to genetically modified crops, so don't worry about it. Fast forward 2 years, and we have the DARPA Insect Allies program. But in some cases, the crops end up growing where they are not wanted. So that would be some sort of digital rights management. Or they have also transmitted their genes to other crops. And remember, guys, that's where I am concerned about this, is the passing of some of these genetically modified organisms, whether they be bacterial or viral, or just modified bacterias, let's say, that are released into the wild, or even bacteria that maybe are given a foothold by spraying things such as glyphosate on genetically modified crops who are immune to the glyphosate. And once that glyphosate, which is a potent antibacterial, hits the soil, it kills the beneficial bacteria, which then opens a doorway for other types of bacteria, whether they be some pathogenic bacteria or maybe some bacteria that maybe has somehow accidentally or on purpose mutated to fill that void that then somehow infects the plants or the animals, becomes a more virulent form of, oh, I don't know, a spore bacteria perhaps. You know, anthrax and bacillus in general tend to be soil dwelling bacteria. Just saying, it is not beyond the realm of possibility. And as we start seeing this upside down world, this is every day seeming to become more and more our actual reality merge with the daily news is coming out. You have to start to worry about these things. You have to start to question what you're reading and what it means and what the potential future. Look down those timelines. Because when you grab that little timeline, I hate to refer to Doctor Who, but they even had that in an episode a few weeks ago. Those aliens that had every timeline. All those little fiber optic cables. And they could just grab one and look down another potential timeline. That's actually what it's like when you start looking at daily events or daily research that is coming out and what could potentially mean 5 years down the line, especially without many controls in place to determine how this is utilized once there are grand discoveries. You really got to worry. So anyway, outside experts said that the work of having these biological kill switches was an advance from previous attempts at biological containment. Well, phew. This research represents a step change toward building reliable control switches for GMOs, says Carmela A. Haynes, an assistant professor at another one of the lizard's pits that we had found gets a lot of DARPA dollars, Arizona State University, in an email using GMO as the initials for genetically modified organisms. A big question, however, is whether these systems are needed or whether they will be used. And these systems, they are referring to biological lockdowns and some of the horrors that they are developing in the labs. Unnatural biology is what I like to call it. Researchers, now listen to this, this was the kicker. Researchers have been talking about biological containment since genetic engineering was invented in the 70s, and we discovered that a lot of that was taking place in the Fort Detrick, Maryland, biological warfare labs. Back in those days, genetic engineering was splicing and dicing all in the name of keeping you safe from pathogens known or unknown and all the crazy stuff that mad scientists could dream up. And many systems have been developed, but some researchers make organisms dependent on nutrients not found outside of the lab or fermenter. We found that they were doing stuff like that with the Oxitec genetically modified mosquitoes that received funding from Bill and Melinda Gates, all in the name of maybe curing malaria. They had released some of those very mosquitoes in Brazil to combat Zika. And they put a kill switch in those mosquitoes to require tetracycline to live. But whoops, there was a little issue with that because tetracycline is used extensively in farming with farm animals. And it is also used extensively in the medical community. So you also have the sewer systems that contain tetracycline. So that didn't necessarily end up being such a great kill switch. It says other labs endow organisms with a genetic kill switch that just cause it to self-destruct. And another question is, when they engineer kill switches, let's say, into an organism's DNA, what happens if that organism's DNA comes into contact with another organism's DNA? Could it potentially be passed to this other organism? And I'm just thinking simply, is it a mosquito? If a mosquito puts its sticker inside of you, whether or not it's just the infected spittle of a mosquito that has something like malaria or dengue or Zika or some other not yet known pathogen, or if it's the blood of another organism that it had bitten just before you, that then maybe sticks its sticker into you, and that blood that is on that sticker, or maybe just little few DNA strands, happens to have some sort of infection. Can it potentially be passed to the organism that gets bitten the second time? You know, that's a really good question, and I think that that is something that people aren't really looking at. It's even beyond that. I mean, like I said, we looked at some of those studies about obesity potentially being contagious. And some of the things that they were talking about was spore bacteria being able to potentially be transmitted to other organisms outside of that organism. And in fact, other individuals. One third thing we looked at, and I have a story to follow up this one with about that, is vaccine shedding. There was a big study about vaccine shedding. There were a large number of vaccines. Remember the bird flu vaccine in particular. Measles was another. That when someone had been quote-unquote inoculated in polio, the live polio that was done intranasally, I think the bird flu, or maybe one of just the general flu, maybe the swine flu even, was done intranasally with a live virus, caused shedding for a week, potentially up to 2 weeks, after the vaccination from the vaccinated individual to the unvaccinated population. And that is a well-established science. That's something that they don't put on the slick sheets. CDC didn't quite mention that one, but it's got to make you wonder. So there's this whole other microbial and viral world that is going on out there that we can't see, we can't hear, we can't smell, we can't taste. But it doesn't mean it's not alive. And remember, we've established as well that we're outnumbered like millions to one from mammalian cells to these microorganisms. And as they are tinkering with microorganisms that infect other living creatures, you just got to wonder what that means for us. We're at the top of the food chain and they are already working on the bottom of the food chain. What do you think is next? Well, shape-shifting immune systems to protect you from pathogens, known or unknown, that just happen to appear out of the blue, never before seen. I mean, that's where it's headed, guys. That's where it's headed. You will become the next grand experiment. But don't worry about it, because we're working on other genetically modified microbes and organisms that apparently don't seem to have a lot of containment. Researchers have been talking about biological containment since genetic engineering was invented in the 1970s. Wink! And many systems have been developed. Some researchers make organisms dependent on a nutrient not found outside the lab or the fermenter, and others just endow the organism with a genetic kill switch that can cause it to self-destruct. But such safeguards have not, I repeat, have not been used extensively. Ding. There have been no serious accidents attributed to genetically engineered microbes. Phew. Says Victor De Lorenzo, at least officially, of course, a research professor at the Spanish National Biotechnology Center in Madrid, Spain, who has studied these systems. Most industrial applications use containment that is physical, like, you know, some sort of biolevel, not biological, meaning that production takes place in an enclosed vessel, not in the open environment, at least until recently. Not in 2015. They didn't publicly yet, because people would have freaked out. But hey, when they told you it was all in the name of keeping you safe, people allowed it. And, oh wait, allowing these genetically modified organisms out into the environment to take care of other organisms that we used to have to spray pesticides on. They convinced us that spraying pesticides for mosquitoes that then, oh no, killed a whole bunch of bees at one point, it was better to utilize the biotechnological destruction rather than the chemical one. Again, chemical biowarfare versus biological warfare. It was all part of the same program that was spearheaded at Fort Detrick. Guys, I mean, it's so connected. It is just, I can't even, like, the more I read, the more angry and upset I get that this is even being allowed to continue, that this is happening underneath our noses, And they're able to craft the narrative and then sell it to you as one big ugly gooky ball of disgustingness that is actually decimating our environment even worse than all of the nuclear and chemical pollution that they've spent a few generations now decimating our planet with. And even more disgusting-er still, is that a word, disgusting-er, is the fact that they're going to profit from it. And all these same rich organizations, universities, governments are all involved. They're all getting their research dollar. And now it has gone from the lab to the big blue petri dish we call Earth. So most industrial applications use containment that is physical, not biological, meaning that production takes place in enclosed vessels, not in the open environment. And even if the microbes escape, they, like domesticated animals, are usually not fit to survive in the wild, says Dr. DiLorenzo. Still, concerns are arising anew because living things are being genetically altered in more extensive ways than before, ding, through techniques called synthetic biology. Yes, that's that X and Y protein amino acid that they are now, instead of using CATG, they now have X and Y as well to create all kinds of wondrous new biological organisms. Some of the potential gene uses of genetically altered organisms, like releasing them to clean up pollution. Now, let's backtrack to the story we read yesterday of some of the areas that the CDC was targeting with their behavioral and disease monitoring call center. And one happened to be the Gulf Coast. And I kind of raised a little red flag there saying how interesting that was because they said it was specifically after the BP oil spill. I had also told you that the Department of Energy is one of the rotten cherries on top. They actually were the department that had released the, I'm trying to remember what the exact name of it was, something like Biological Technology Engineering Report to Congress of 2014 out of the Department of Energy, talking about being able to make biofuels and do all these neat things for cleanup in the environment if it were ever required. And here we are now talking about being able to utilize genetically altered organisms to release to clean up pollution in the wild. The DARPA lady also talked about that as well. Biotechnology companies are trying to genetically engineer immune systems. There we go. Shape-shifting immune systems. To attack tumors, all in the name of curing cancer. But when these engineered cells are infused into patients, they do exactly what I had warned against. They may cause a dangerous immune system overreaction, and that is where some of those adjuvants of old come in as well. They may even cause autoimmune disorders. So some companies are now incorporating a suicide gene into the engineered cells so they can be killed by administration of a drug if things go awry. One company, oh, the love to hate, named Oxitec out of Oxford University, who spun out a little IPO for a company to make genetically modified mosquitoes that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has invested in. We're also using gene drive technology, which is a technology that Georgie Porgy Church was involved in that utilizes CRISPR and Billy Gates has invested in. Oxitec has developed a genetically engineered mosquito to fight mosquito-borne dengue fever. We found out they also developed one to target Zika. The altered mosquitoes have a gene that kills them unless they get the antibiotic tetracycline, like we mentioned. Remember, tetracycline, they found, is also available in the environment. They can be bred in the laboratory, yes, or in your mosquito factory that you built, where the antibiotic is available. But once they are released into the wild to mate with wild mosquitoes, they soon die, wink, as do their offspring, who inherit this lethal gene, reducing the population of the insect. Now, we found that there is also another way that they have been targeting insects, and that would be with Wolbachia bacteria. We mentioned that the other day as well. They take a bacteria that is prevalent in the insect kingdom. But what this bacteria does is it infects the insect to make the insect's reproductive apparatus, and I don't exactly know if it's a chemical or if it's an enzyme or if it's a hormone or if it's just messes with the DNA, but somehow that Wolbachia infection makes the reproductive processes between the male and the female Aedes aegypti mosquito incompatible. Now let's think about that for a moment. As they are splicing and dicing things that affect reproduction in insects that potentially could come into contact with humans and, like I said, bite them, and who knows if they can pass genetic material of one form or another through their spittle to the organism that they bite. But let's just for one moment put on a little had a fantasy for a second and say that maybe, just maybe, maybe in the 1 in 10 bazillion chance that they could pass some sort of infection or gene from Wolbachia bacteria that affects reproduction in this insect and it infected a human or, let's say, even some livestock. Wouldn't that just be the cat's ass that we could have some flying vaccinator, quote unquote? The Japanese scientists were working on that. They were even working on flying vaccinators with mosquitoes to cure or eliminate malaria as well as leishmaniosis. And that would be, which I never even realized until a year or so ago, that leishmaniosis, which is elephant man disease, was spread by mosquitoes in the desert. You know, those desert mosquitoes that love it hot and dry. I don't know. There seems to be a lot of those around down in Texas. Like, how do mosquitoes live in 100-degree temperatures? They say, of course, it's in puddles. Yeah, there's lots of puddles around when it's 110 for 6 months out of the year. You know, but whatever. They also found a way to vaccinate against leishmaniosis and malaria by genetically modifying mosquitoes to be flying vaccinators. Guys, that's not too much of a stretch of the imagination. When we start looking at now, the CDC developing a mental health surveillance network, as well as a disease surveillance network, as well as that Section 399S, 21st Century Cures Act, talking about neurological surveillance. And I'm going to tell you something else. I found something that almost made me literally fall off my chair. I'll give you a little taste. Guess who else? And we should have guessed it, but I didn't. Guess who else is involved in creating genetically modified mosquitoes to cure disease utilizing Wolbachia bacteria? Alphabet. Alphabet, the parent company to Google. And you're not even going to believe which division, because I almost fell off my chair literally. Alphabet is not only developing genetically modified mosquitoes for a project of theirs called Debug. The Debug Project. But they are utilizing AI. So this is a double whammy. To help rid communities of disease-carrying mosquitoes. proposals to control insect populations by genetically modifying the pests have been controversial, but Alphabet says it has a nice non-GMO solution. And this is how they're getting around now being quote-unquote GMO. They're just infecting them with things. This would happen to be that Wolbachia, like I said, to mutate their reproductive capabilities so they are no longer compatible with the female of their species. If all goes as planned, Alphabet's life science division, Cupidel, for anyone who can tell me the name of Alphabet's life science division and who happens to work there. Oh, yes, more affectionately known as Google's Verily division, the very same division that Tommy Inzel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, works for. Oh, yes, that division. Verily, the health company that sits under the Alphabet umbrella, has been quietly working for a few years on an effort known as the Debug Project. Now, if you go to their page, debug.com, you gotta love the narrative, the way that they've crafted this one. It's a big, pretty blue page that gets your attention. It's got a few little animated GIFs of flying mosquitoes, and it says really big in the center, "Let's stop bad bugs with good bugs." Now talk about getting the attention of Americans with a 7-second attention span. Let's stop bad bugs with good bugs. Bad mosquitoes spread disease. Good mosquitoes can stop them. Debug is a group of scientists and engineers developing technology to raise and release sterile mosquitoes to eliminate the ones that carry the disease. Mosquitoes are the deadliest animals on the planet. Mosquitoes kill more than every other animal combined. One species, the Aedes aegypti, carries diseases such as dengue, Zika, yellow fever, and chikungunya, which make hundreds of millions of people sick every year. And these diseases are spreading faster than ever. And then there's a map of the globe that shows the Aedes aegypti and the dengue range from 2015. And I found very interesting that these same highlighted areas on this map happen to be the same areas that that Center for Disease Control document about their call center that was proposed for surveilling disease as well as mental health happened to highlight some of the very same countries, including Brazil, China. Wait a minute, let me see if Jordan is on here. Where's Jordan? Maybe. It's got a whole bunch of the Middle East. It's also got the coast of Italy, as well as the Caribbean, Vietnam, and South Korea, all listed. Not saying, just saying. Seems to be an interesting correlation, and who would have thunk it that Google's Verily division would have been involved? I couldn't even believe that one. It says that they are helping communities in the United States and beyond, wink, reduce populations of invasive species of mosquitoes called Aedes aegypti. This particular species is a known carrier of potentially fatal diseases like dengue, Zika, chikungunya, and yellow fever. And Verily's steadily growing team of mosquito biologists and computer scientists are focusing its energies on the quote-unquote sterile insect technique. That's got to make you really kind of wonder. The Google's Life Sciences division has a steadily growing team of mosquito biologists and computer scientists. And this technique has been used for many decades. So don't worry about it, Johnny. Go back to sleep. Shh. Because we make bad bugs into good bugs. I want a t-shirt that says that. and then make it like a mutant mosquito. This particular, oh, I already read that. All right. Verily, steadily growing team of mosquito biologists and computer scientists are focusing its energies on the sterile insect technique, which have been used for many decades to control mosquito populations. The idea is to release infertile male insects into the wild to mate with females that will then release eggs that just don't hatch. This is the most effective in controlling mosquito species that do not travel much in their lifetimes and only mate once. On both of these counts, the Aedes aegypti is an ideal candidate. This is also the very same one that Oxitec, Bill Melinda Gates, and the Gene Drives are targeting as well, and some of the other Wolbachia experiments that have been going on. This might seem like an odd proposition for a company that was formerly part of Google X, but Linus Upson, Verily's vice president of engineering, he has been interested in tackling this problem since his undergraduate days at Princeton University. That is when I found out how many people that mosquitoes kill and sicken. He says cars kill more people than mosquitoes by just a bit, but others at Alphabet are working on that problem as well, and that would be their self-driving car division. Alphabet is also the parent company of Google, which is working on bringing autonomous vehicles to the road. And in recent years, proposals that would genetically modify insects in order to control populations and fight disease have proven controversial. In Florida's Key West, where Zika cases have been reported, and mind you, they did let those go, a biotech company called, yes, again, love to hate them, Oxitec, unveiled a plan to inject mosquito eggs with DNA that contained lethal genes. Many residents shared concerns about these plans. And remember, the story we read from 2015, New York Times, says, well, don't worry about it. This has only been done in the lab. Well, don't worry about it now, because now they've used the real world as the actual laboratory, which includes fears that maybe these residents were being used as human experiments. Ding-a-ling! Guess what? Those people were probably correct. And that would explain why the CDC is targeting their very areas to now surveil not only their disease incidences, but their mental health. For this very reason, Verily's debug project is focusing on non-GMO alternatives. Right. You're just going to be working on the depopulation program. Sterilize the male mosquito by infecting them with a naturally occurring bacteria called Wolbachia. It has been known for some time that this bacteria, and I'm going to look into like how far they've gotten genetically engineering Wolbachia, by the way, because if they CRISPRed the Wolbachia and then infected the mosquito, they don't officially have to label it as genetically modified, don't forget. It has been known for some time that the Wolbachia bacteria, which is possibly the most common reproductive parasite. It'd be interesting also to see how many reproductive parasites in humans have just appeared out of the blue to cause stillborns or mutations that don't allow women to reproduce, will cause the males to become sterile while leaving them physically up to task of competing for females in the wild. Earlier this summer, and this was from October 2016, so this was last summer, they are talking about earlier this summer, a company called Mosquito Mate, oh, that's a good name for a slick, filed for approval from the Environmental Protection Agency to get Wolbachia in a related mosquito called the Aedes aegypti as a pesticide. So there you have it. This would be reproductive pesticide. Some labs, such as Stephen Dobson at the University of Kentucky, have already tested the Wolbachia technique in a field in a relatively uninhabited place. And in August, a city called Clovis, California, we talked about them when this was happening, released 400,000 males carrying Wolbachia into the wild to control their Aedes aegypti problem. You know, and they sold that one as environmentally friendly, quote unquote. You know, how disturbing is this? So 2015, you know, there was no releasing this stuff out of the lab because it was too scary. But look it, fast forward 2 years. And they have experiments going on everywhere. And just wait, because if I can keep going, and I'm going to probably run out of time. But there's quite a number of cases now that have been going on all over the globe. What Verily is bringing to the table is its machine learning and computer vision expertise. Oh, yes, you had to know it. It's robot googly eyes. The company has developed algorithms to rapidly distinguish between male and female mosquitoes by picking up on subtle physical characteristics that are almost impossible to detect with the naked eye, just like their robot vision for detecting micro expressions. You guys, this is all the same technology. It's just being applied in so many different ways, like a miracle Swiss Army knife that are all going to be used to splice and dice not only the human condition, but all life on Earth to turn it against us potentially. Find ways to not only cure you, but to always kill you as well, or to prevent you from reproducing, in this case in particular. In a blog post, the company shared that it is working on prototypes related to automated rearing and releasing the insects. Well, that would go well in a grand reproduction factory like some that we have seen, we're going to be looking at if we get a chance in China and Brazil. As well as new sensors to track the mosquito population. Any way that you can automate and increase accuracy without accidentally releasing females is a good thing, says Jason Rison, an associate professor of entomology, and disease epidemiology. And guess where he's at? Penn U. Penn U. They've been doing all kinds of CRISPRing and AI. And when asked about the role that Verily might play, if the company can show the efficacy of its technology in peer-reviewed papers, Ragson says that it might lead to this Wolbachia technique being more widely adopted. At this stage, Upson admits that the technology is far from perfect, oh, kind of like CRISPR, but that it is getting smarter over time. And we are at the prototype phase right now, he says, but we can achieve a high level of accuracy. In recent months, Ragson says that he has seen the company recently pluck some of the quote-unquote excellent minds out of academia, including fellow entomologists. Again, entomological warfare to work on this problem. Verily's Upson wouldn't share how many experts it has hired to date. Let's just say that we are making significant investments. And, you know, then when you couple with that the Middle East does apparently have lots of mosquitoes, you could see how they could be using this not only to, quote unquote, protect the homelands, but also to potentially use it in the future to spread maybe some sort of biological disease through little flying vaccinators. Well, here's something that disturbed me as well. I came across this yesterday. Vaccines of the future could be as contagious as viruses. And remember, I talked about vaccine shedding. And there was quite an extensive paper outlining different vaccine shedding. But listen to this one. This is out of Popular Science, June 5th, 2017. So that was just a few days ago. It is time to go viral. The vaccines we have today are pretty incredible. This is the paper, not me. They have eradicated smallpox, purged rubella from Americans, and saved millions of people each year from dying from diphtheria, tetanus, whooping cough, and measles, they say. But when enough people get vaccinated, infectious diseases can't spread easily, and everyone, they are concluding, will benefit from that quote-unquote herd immunity. But we have found a little different in our research. But it is hard to reach enough people for this to happen. Yes, damn those anti-vaxxers out there, especially in areas with poor public health infrastructure. So scientists are now going to take a leaf from the virus playbook. They are devising vaccines and antiviral therapies that can spread from host to host. Oh, just like the updates I told you in the Windows 10 machine that you can't turn off. I mentioned that last week that I had discovered that if one machine on your network gets an update, there's now a setting by default that'll push it out to everything else on your network. Yes, well, don't forget, they're using computer programmers now to program some of this biotechnology backend. And they are taking a leaf out of that very playbook, people. I am seeing so many connections to the computer and networking world, to some of the insanity that they are now doing in the lab. That, you know, this isn't a surprise to me. These quote-unquote transmissible vaccines will likely be first used in animals that carry diseases that can infect people. Oh, what, like a mosquito? Oh, my God. But they may be used in a weakened version of the virus or attach a piece of pathogen to a benign virus. So they are going to release a, what I call, Typhoid Mary to the environment to then infect everybody else. And that infection that you gain will make you better, Johnny. Shh, don't worry about it. You won't even know. And it won't hurt a bit. Other treatments are aimed at people who are already infected and will prey on the virus that dwells inside of their cells. So they're going to infect some people that are determined to have quote-unquote viruses with something that will then go in and start eating you and what infects you. I mean, how insane is this? It is the early days for these types of vaccines and therapies. I think I need to send this to April and Clint. And the scientists still have to show that they are effective and safe to be used in wildlife or people, wink. But they could tamp down on the spread of things such as HIV and other contagious diseases. So they'll probably try it in Africa first. Immunize people who would not otherwise be protected, of course, in Africa. And this strategy would be cheaper than vaccinating everyone by hand. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Tuesday, lots and lots and lots of live radio tonight, and I will catch up with you tomorrow.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and I am the host of Anti-Media Radio on UCY.TV.